welcome everybody to another edition of Forever Bristol City podcast. What a week. What an absolute week. Nigel's gone. Lots of reaction to that, which we're going to talk about. I'm delighted today to be joined by Ian, Mark and Les. We're going to go through the match action, speculate on the managerial talk, some of the things that have been said by the hierarchy. For what it's worth, I thought yesterday it was a little bit mooted, the Nigel Pearson gone protest, few chances towards the end of the game, but the hierarchy got off lightly there. But 3 points does make a difference, doesn't it? There we go. As we usually do, thoughts on the team. I'll start with you, Ian. Four changes. You know, no. Dave Rennie's gone, and then four players you've been out injured come back. Were you surprised at that lineup?
I was surprised to see Matty James out there. I wasn't surprised to see the lineup itself, and good to have all those players back. For me, yesterday, the positives were 3 points and a clean sheet. We had 65% possession, and for once, when we've had a lot more possession, we won. 7 shots on target. We were shooting more from outside the box. We did pass the ball forward more times. We passed the ball forward 400 times. But the where we fell down is touches in the opposition box. And that probably tells you a lot about Bristol City. And I was very pleased to see the crowd hold up as well. It is this 22,500 with the away side bringing about 2,500. By the way, great following from Sheffield Wednesday yesterday. I'm absolutely convinced we wouldn't have taken that many to Sheffield Wednesday if we were bottom of the league and where they are. And I didn't think they looked a bad team. I think they had some really quick players. That impressed me. So all good, you know, good stuff. Good to see that will be, I think, Curtis Fleming's last game. So he can say he's got had 100% managerial record at Bristol City.
Walking out the ground, he's got 100% record. Les, I haven't spoken to you for a couple of weeks, but, you know, it's, as somebody said, another 1-0 win and ugly, because Sheffield, even when they were down to 10 men, they weren't a bad side, were they? Well, I don't know. What did you think? What were your thoughts immediately after the game?
I thought it was a fitting ending to the Pearson era in that we were slow, pedestrian, lacked any creativity anywhere on the pitch, made a really poor side look half decent, and they could have scored once or twice before we did. Good luck to the new manager, because when Pearson side a load of runners, that's all well and good, but you need quality to break teams down, and we haven't got anyone who can really do that. If you look at it, most of our goals recently have come from set pieces. So no, I wasn't very impressed. Hopefully a more creative manager will come in and get into 2023. I think this Pearson loving, I mean, he did a lot of good work behind the scenes, as we know, but on the pitch, I've seen nothing over the last 2.5 years to say, you know, to really get this kind of this.
So glad it's not just me.
I think the thing is, a couple of people on social media were commenting about the marvelous moments we've had with Nigel, and I have to say, okay, it's been one or two good games, but I was struggling to think. I mean, even under Lee, you know, you can talk about the Man United Cup run, but, you know, it's been dull. What were your thoughts on the final whistle, Mark? I mean, the guys have said it's a win, it's a clean sheet. What did you think?
I think if you look at the game, it's very counterproductive for the board because, they had the narrative talking about Nigel Pearson's dismissal, because obviously there's an NDA in place and he can't talk from his point of view because he's gagged. The board have talked up the quality of the squad. That game completely exposed, as usual, the deficiency of the squad, and that we were not good enough to challenge at the top of the table. A team that played with fear in the opposition penalty box, not passing the ball enough in the box and having shooting chances, hitting those low passes, somebody throwing themselves at the ball, getting ahead of the ball, getting goal side of defenders, couldn't compete with a physical Sheffield Wednesday team who continually played themselves out of cul-de-sacs. I counted numerous times they were in the corner of the pitch with three City players on them, and they played their way up the pitch quite easily. And yeah, the game, I think, really exposed our deficiencies. The board talk about how the quality of the squad, that game just said, I'm sorry, but no. The new manager is going to have to, we're going to need a coach who can come in and coach those players a lot better, because at the moment they're not good enough and we're going to continue to struggle. We just can't score goals. Our two winning goals in the last four games have been scored by a central defender. Three goals in the last five games. We are struggling like hell to score. Really struggling. Tommy Conway looks like he's lost a yard of pace. There's problems there, and a new coach is going to have to dig us out of that.
Okay, no, well said, Mark. I think, well, that's, everybody's pretty consistent in what they're saying. I mean, we got the win, but a bit like the Coventry game, you know, it was, you know, the other side that did look the better team for periods, yeah? And they started brightly, but I think the game possibly hinged on what happened in the on the half-hour mark, 32 minutes. Lewis Smith, the referee, he'd done three red cards in his previous five. He made it four in six with the dismissal of Barry Bannon, a player we've coveted for that midfield creativity for a number of years. I'm sorry, but I think that ship's passed, because he's got to be well into his 30s now, Barry Bannon. But I'll come to each of you with your thoughts on, was it a penalty? Even talk about whether it was a red card, because whilst he was shaping to shoot, you know, it wasn't the last man. But you first, Ian, penalty, red card, or what did you think?
On the day, I thought it was a definite penalty and definite red card. There's talk about this first contact, but the first contact didn't stop Knight. It was the contact when he'd gone a bit further and he was either on the line or just inside the box for me. So I'd say red card penalty. Clear goal scoring opportunity. Cynical foul. It wasn't like he tried to tackle it properly.
He just thought he was outside the box, which referee, he had a little nibble, didn't he? And then he holds his hands up like that.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. People are saying it wasn't a penalty because the first contact was outside the box. Well, that's not an actual rule. If the first contact's outside the box and a bloke goes into the box and a bloke hits him again, that's a penalty. So I'm not having this, it wasn't a penalty because the first contact was outside the box. It was denying a clear and obvious goal scoring opportunity. So he gets the red card. And to be honest, I thought, as much as he's a very influential player, and I think he's only about 31, I think, I couldn't. Wednesday didn't seem to get a lot worse when he went off. And that's worrying, really, when you think that's the same as saying we didn't get a great deal better when we were playing against 10. So, yeah, right. For me,
Les,
both.
Your thoughts on it. There's a couple of rule points to consider. Even Keith Hackett on the X, Sheffield Wednesday fan, funny enough, but some of their fans were bitching about whether or not it was a penalty. But what was your take on it?
Well, it's a red card because he's denied a clear goal scoring opportunity and he's given it outside the box. Just because there's a defender on the line doesn't mean it's not a clear goal scoring opportunity. Mm. So it has to be a red because he's given the free kick. It's hard to say, and I feel a bit sorry for the referee, because this rule where, you know, something starts outside and then finishes inside, it feels like it's a very difficult decision for the referee to have to make, especially at real time when the guy's running at pace. So I've got no issue with him giving the free kick, because that's when it did start. But it was a tough call for the ref, and I've got no issue with the call he made. The main call was the red card, because a lot of referees would have bottled that because there was a defender on the line and he didn't. But it's one of those rules in football that makes things more difficult than it needs to be.
Yeah. What about the referee's assistant?
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant because he decided that the foul started outside the box, so therefore he gave the free kick. It's this rule where it continues, and how can you expect the referee to make a consistent decision? Because a referee next week will give a different one, and then a referee the next week after that will give another different one, because they'll interpret it in different ways. What they need is a really clear answer or guidance, which states when the foul is committed at the start, that's when you call the foul. Otherwise, you're going to get different refs seeing it in different ways.
Yeah.
And it's not clear. The law ain't clear, and that makes it difficult for the refs. But I've got no issue with the decision he made because, look, he did clip him outside the box to start with. He made that decision. I've got no issue with that.
Yeah. Mark, your take on that incident?
The referee decides that the foul, yeah, that he fouled the fouls outside the box, whether it continued inside the box or not, and that's it. The thing about Jason Knight is he likes to stay on his feet, and there were a few more occasions in the game where he was riding tackles. He didn't want to go down. He wants to stay on his feet and continue.
But, unlike Alex Scott.
Well, I mean, I think it was different with Alex Scott. Yeah, he'd do that. Yeah, I think they were like tactical fouls, and he would be in traffic. You know, we'd be surrounded by players, or there'd be players in front of him or behind him, and he was doing that as a tactical, you know, tactical fouls to win possession in the opponent's half. So I think it's not comparable with Alex Scott, because he was through. He wanted to stay on his feet. But yeah, I mean, the crazy thing really is if you look at Dawson, the Sheffield Wednesday keeper, he's on the far left or far right of his penalty area, and he plays the ball at an angle across to Bannon. It's the most stupid pass. If Max O'Leary had done that, we'd be getting a gallows and a screaming mob with burning staves out marched around his house, wouldn't we?
It was an appalling
pass.
Ian, do you think we made enough of that free kick situation? There was a few people calling for Taylor Gardner. Somebody said you're calling Taylor Gardner Haskins after the retailer of the same name, but Taylor Gardner Hickman. Who was the best guy to take the free kick in that particular situation? Because it was Conway.
I probably haven't got one, is the strict answer. If Cal Naismith was on the field, I wouldn't mind Cal having a go at it. But we haven't got an Alan Walsh or a Jimmy Mann or
Mickey Bell, Darren Barnard. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, we've had some good free kick takers over the years, but we haven't got one now. Our dead balls, bang average. Our crossing, poor in the main, although we scored from across yesterday, but it was the centre forward who crossed it. Mm. So this is why, you know, if you start looking at some of these dismissals and the reasons around them, I mean, Jason Yule's the attacking coach.
Was.
And we...
He's gone.
Was the attacking coach.
Oh, it's past tense now, isn't it?
And we stopped scoring, and we don't score goals. So can that guy say, well, based on my performance since I've been at the club, I deserve to keep my job? I know it's supposed to surround this time off issue. But we've been not crossing the ball properly for ages. Right. I mean, well, ever since Nigel's been down here, I think probably the best crosser of the ball is probably on his day is probably Cam Pring.
Yeah, when he gets down that line. So Les, you know, all right. Let's move on. Les, 0-0 at half time. I mean, yeah, they're down to 10 men. They had to play for an hour. They were quite a physical and athletic side, and I thought throughout the game, we'll get into the detail of the second half, but they had a stronger physical presence. I took a guest to the game, and he said we lost all the sort of 50-50 challenges, or most of them. What did you think?
That's because we got a team of runners and not a lot else. You know, if you're playing against a load of lumps, you pass the ball around them, play in the pockets, and you break them down. Who have we got who can play or who can perform football in that way? Naismith can pass the ball, Dickie can pass the ball, and Mometi. No one else can. So then you just run. You're running up against big lumps who are going to outmuscle you. So, you know, like I said earlier, Pearson has put a team together of players who can run. When you're playing at home against teams who sit in and play on the break, you need more than that. So we played into their hands, really, and we didn't have the quality to break them down, which has been the case for months.
Mark, three substitutions on the hour, Mark, and I guess they were to give some of the recovering players, certainly in Tanner and Viner's case, just give them an hour and then rest them. No game this midweek, but three in a row. Andy Vyman taken off. I mean, I'm sorry, I bang on about Vyman. You know, he can't dine out on that 21-22 season, but the timing of the subs and who came off, and Vyman's performance. What did you think about that, Mark?
Again, lost in the 4-2-3-1. I think he's got to contribute more to the game. Perhaps, you know, he's going to be dropping deep. He would be better as a centre forward. I mean, this 4-2-3-1 is just ridiculous when we haven't got a player capable of holding the ball up at all. It's a waste, complete waste of time. Just players lose the ball. But that Vyman is just ineffectual is probably a very diplomatic way of putting it. He's a finisher. But he's not in a position to to finish. Perhaps there aren't crosses coming in. He's not in those positions. Does he need to get in those positions? You know, just playing give and goes with players, and when we need to be bolder and more aggressive in their opponent's penalty area, possibly that's up to him. But I think that switch, whether it's in his head, whether it's his ability, he's basically edging right out the door. His contract's up and he's not worth a new one on this form. And football's brutal, but that's the way it is. I'm sorry, Andy, but, you know, I've just got to say, because we get hammered for facts, Barry Bannon's 30, he's 33, he'll be 33. 34. Yeah, he's 34 on the 1st of December because, yeah, all those people who hammer us for facts, we got to say that, haven't we?
Of course.
Be very careful.
And his first sending off since 2016. Ian, your views on the timing of the subs, who it was. I mean, I like Sykes at right back. You know, he seems to slot in there quite nicely. And the right side, I thought, looked reasonable overall yesterday. But talk about the subs and put your bit in on Vyman.
They were probably predetermined because the players had come back from injury. George Tanner and Zach Vyman, 60 minutes. Right, they give them 60 minutes. And then replaced from the bench. And replacements were fairly obvious, which going into right back. Andy Vyman. If we keep playing him out of position, you're not going to see the best of him. He had his best season playing his end behind the two strikers. Mm. Or as part of that three, the WSM. So last week he was right wing, trying to look after a right back. Then this week he was left wing of the three. And I don't like this setup with the two wide forwards and one in the middle. It just doesn't work. And that's why we're not scoring goals.
They don't seem to play as a unit, do they? There's no...
Well, we don't score goals because nobody in midfield's going to score a goal. And they're not going to get an assist either. So we finish up with... Well, Jason Knight might get some goals and he might get some assists. But, you know, Matty James... Good, solid bloke, won't let people run through you. Notice it, a bit like Paul Skuse, noticing more when he's not in the team than when he is. But he's not going to put a lot of pace on you in transition because he'll pick the ball up. And the number of times we slid it backwards or sideways yesterday, and that's not something that suddenly happened yesterday. We've been doing that for the last 2.5 years. Yeah. So, you know, for me... Yeah, substitutes were all fine. I think we could have probably done with getting Cornick on for Conway a bit earlier because, I mean, Tommy couldn't outpace Diaby at centre-back. Mm. And Diaby was a bigger, stronger guy. So I get that Tommy's not going to do him in the air or muscle him out the way in the way that Semenyo used to. But he's had four or five chances yesterday, a straight race, and he couldn't beat him in a foot race. So, I mean, the one at the end when he had to just keep going, basically, and kick the ball in the net, he just blew up. So, I can't... that bothers me. But I think all of our strikers, as I keep saying, would be better in a two than a one. We haven't got a natural one. And so, don't play 4-2-3-1.
Well, please. We've got a chance to see if the new manager's in post by the middle of the week, whether there will be a fundamental change at QPR. Les, I'll stick with you very briefly and then I'll come to you first, Les, on the goal. But Sykes slotting in at right back, that seems to be a sort of go-to substitution. And, you know, I think he's no less effective. Well, I think he's quite effective at right back anyway. He gives you a creative outlet and he can put in a tackle as well. What do you think?
Yeah, but he's one of our only goal-scoring threats when we play at home. So I like to see him at right wing. because he gets in behind, he gets into good positions, and he scores goals. He's not going to do that at fullback. I mean, when Tanner's injured, then yeah, you need someone to fill in, and he's the obvious replacement. I think he's better there than Gardner Hickman is. But ideally, I'd like to see Sykes on the right side of midfield because he gets into those positions and becomes a threat, which is something we haven't had a lot of recently. Yeah.
And I think the general view is with Andy Vyman that, you know, we're being critical, but we're not playing him in his best position. So maybe
I think Vyman's been a good servant, but it's time to move on. He's in his early 30s. He hasn't got the same dynamic, you know, I don't know how to word it, you know, pace off a very, off almost like a standing start. Mm. And I don't know what his best position is anymore.
Maybe he doesn't. Sticking with you for the goal, it came on the hour, a corner. I mean, Dickey was set up by Sykes, took a pass from Conway. Dickey's proving to be, you know, quite good in the opposition penalty area and a pretty decent signing, you would say, based on everything we've seen of him so far.
Well, if you would have told me over a year ago that we'd be getting Rob Dickey for peanuts, I would have said no chance. He was so highly rated that he was being linked with top-end championship clubs and low-end Premier League clubs. And then what happened was he had a horrible season, like most of them. And then we got him. And what he's showing now is the quality that he showed 2-3 years ago. So I think he's a very good bit of business. I think he's strong in the air. I think he's playing with confidence. He's a threat going forward. I think he's a very good signing. And I think we took advantage of his a poor spell at QPR and maybe the Oxford contacts that we had in Atkinson and Sykes, who I think played with him previously, may have helped us in getting him. But he's been a very good signing.
Yeah, no, he's good. Mark, he's turning into the new Aidan Flint in terms of being deadly in the box, isn't he? It was a tidy finish as well. Mark, sound's gone.
It's on mute.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. You know, he's a beast. I remember the goal he got against Preston in the last minute of the game last season, same thing, threw himself at the ball. You're crying out for somebody to do that, be in that position. And he was right on the spot, deflected. But if you're there, you need somebody to be in that position to put it in. But he dominates defenders in the air, and he likes to bring the ball out of defense as well. What he needs is, if he's going to run at the pitch, he needs somebody to offer. He needs an option, somebody to offer themselves forward, because they just stand still. He did that 2 or 3 times yesterday, and I bet he's thinking, Who's moving for me? Somebody has got to move. Just move. Find the space. Then play it into the space, because it's a waste of time. It's like a man, you know, who's runs up to the edge of the road in a busy road and standing on the curb, waiting across every time.
Ian, you wanted to make a point there, Ian. I was going to come to you.
I'm talking earlier about people who can strike a free kick. Rob Dickey can. If you go on YouTube, you'll see him scoring from 25, 30 yards, a lot of the time with low right-footed shots. So he can do it, and whether he could do it from the edge of the box or whatever, but he wouldn't be any worse than anybody else we've got, and it could be a lot better. Mm. And like Les said, picking him up for what we did, which was 700,000, that's looking a very, very good deal.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, so there we go. We're 1-0 ahead, half an hour to go if you add in certain minutes or extra time. I wasn't counting, but I went, as I say, with a good friend of mine to the game yesterday, and he was counting, and there was about, I'll say 30, that's being conservative, 30 passes at one stage in the second half where we were just knocking the ball around. It culminated with first Tommy Conway, then Sam Bell hitting the post. I mean, you know, We had the possession yesterday, Les, and that was a golden opportunity. Belly should have buried that second one, shouldn't he? And then the game's over, isn't it?
Yeah, but he's playing without any confidence. So that's what happened when he lacked confidence. I mean, I think he's been fast-tracked into the first team and playing more football than they originally thought he would. I think a lot of that's down to Mometi not having the impact that they wanted. Obviously, when Semenya went, they reinvested some of that cash on Cornick and Mometi, and neither of them have really had the impact that they would have hoped for, which means that people like Bell are perhaps playing more football more regularly than they usually would be. I mean, you should have scored, but when you're lacking confidence, that's what happens. And we are weak on that left-hand side, whether it's Mometi, whether it's Weimann, whether it's Bell. I think that's an area that we need to look to strengthen. I'm not sure we will, because we're obviously being careful with what we money we're spending. But he's a kid, he's a youth player, so he gets less stick than others would. He works hard, but over the last few months, I've seen nothing to suggest that he's ready to play regular football at this level.
That's interesting. Mark, what was your take on that? Did you count the passes? Because we did have, unusually for us, in fact, our stats yesterday, pretty good. 65, only one goal, 65% possession, 17 shots, 7 on target. And, you know, those two, do they count on target when they hit the post, Mark, or
no,
not?
No, they don't. No.
So there we go. But, you know, that game's out of sight at 2-0 when they're down to 10 men, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it matters about the number of passes. It's how you open the teams up. That's the idea, isn't it? You're trying to find angles. Yeah. It was one of the better passes that opened up Tommy, because the ball was hit into the middle of the penalty area.
Yeah.
Tommy's shot is actually a good shot because the ball's behind him and he manages. The keeper's actually watching it. He stood upright and he's watching the ball hit the post because he can't get to it. But Sam, he's right in front of the goal. He just has to hit the ball cleanly into the back of the net. He should score. Basically, it's open goal, open chance, and he doesn't hit it with any power. I think he tries to put it in the far side of the goal, and it hits the post. It's a bad miss, but it was a good move, and it was, like I said, we don't do that enough. The ball was hit from the edge of just outside the D into somebody in the box. Now, I'd like to have seen that more, you know, just a give and go to somebody with their back to goal, because if somebody challenges you in that position, they could have given away a penalty. If they come through the back of a player, just take a chance, play a wall pass to somebody and then hit through the ball. We hardly saw that. If you look at the touches in the opposition box, I think they're about 21 each, or we had 21 and they had 20. And the game was a lot closer. I mean, people are saying we should have hammered Sheffield Wednesday. I'm not saying we should, because in terms of ability, I think they were very close.
17 we had, they had 24, despite having 35% possession.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing I think, just aside, at half time, just after half time roll, now there's a German manager who's just been appointed, 34 years old, first managerial job. Coach with a German national team. He's been assistant a few, but he's only 34 years old. I'm sure he looked at his players and he told them to go out and win the game. He said, we can win this. And they went out in the first 10 minutes in that half and played like they had 11. They don't worry about how many players you've got. Just go out there and win it. And well, that's what they went to do. They sized us up and they said, you can beat this lot.
Yeah,
seriously, you can go out and beat him. Good point.
Ian, Les, Luke, we can't talk about Cornick yesterday because he only got 93 minutes. And the last couple of months, the impact sub has always been, it seems, Ephraim Yeboah, who didn't get on the pitch yesterday. But what did you think of Mometi? Got a good half hour, and Les has said he hasn't really done enough. Do you think there could be a renaissance for Mometi under a new boss, or do you think he's just lacking the physicality and the step-ups too much for him?
You'd certainly hope so, wouldn't you? Because we spent decent money on him. I look at him in Cornick and I think, why? Why did we bring him to the club? At a cost of about £1 million. I don't understand I don't really see why you have a player like Mometi and then try and change him into a bit of a robot that comes back, covers the full back and things like that. But that was a sort of that's the sort of, I think, manager Pearson was, that he wanted that work rate above all else. I mean, he said, I want to sign a Maverick. When he came, I think, for me, Mometi looked a better player when he first came here than he looks now.
Yeah, the Sunderland game, Sunderland away, was his best performance, which is his first, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, if you look at a new coach, might revitalise him. We've seen that before with players. So, yeah, please God, they do. But I still think there are fundamentals there. For example, we need to play with two strikers, and that doesn't need to be 4-4-2. It doesn't need to be 3-5-2. It could be a 4-3-1-2. But we need to play with two strikers because of the players that we've got. Just saying, Dave, there's a few questions coming up, not about the game specifically.
Well, let's go on to the manager later, Ian. I've seen those come up on the...
Yeah, I think there's some there that I've got answers to some of them, but...
Ian's going to do the big reveal. Quick one from you, Mark. What were you saying? Putting your hand up there. Then I'll come to Les. Get yourself off mute.
Yeah, so you can hear me gargle any coffee. You've got some like Jason Knight with his energy. Could we play with two eights in midfield like we did at the start of the Holden era, you know, when we won those games? The guy, you can see, wants to burst into life, and sometimes he's like a one-man battering ram. But you can imagine him playing off of somebody, and I think that the idea, which was naive in the extreme, was that he was going to be able to play alongside Alex Scott. Alex Scott was always going to leave. It was just when the right bid came in. But if they were able to play with two players like that, two attacking midfield players, somebody with the energy at night, with the ability to go at teams.
As long as we've got a creative player in there, and is there a formation of 4-2-2-2 type thing? But we don't want to talk about formation. I just want to wrap up on the game. I'm going to finish on the game, well, and all of you, really. We're winning 1-0, but typical against 10 men. Les, we saw the good and the bad of Max O'Leary yesterday, didn't we? In the sense that some of his distribution in the first half was absolutely appalling. And then at the start of the second half, as Mark said, when Sheffield came out looking a strong side, he punched away an eye off a header. He got praise from Tony Thorpe, I know, in the post-match analysis on Radio Bristol, that he came and collected a couple of balls on the edge of his box. But that save, Les, that he did after, I think it was Taylor Gardner-Hickman had fouled, and it was Volk's free kick, and Ashley Fletcher's there. You know, that was a match-saving save without any doubt. So your thoughts on that save and Max, championship goalkeeper?
He's a championship goalkeeper, but he's not a championship goalkeeper if you're looking to get into the top six. So if you are a lower-end side, then I think he's a perfectly good keeper. If you're a Rotherham, if you're a QPR, then yeah. But like the board have said, we're looking for promotion. And the thing with O'Leary is his reactions at point-blank range are very good. The issue is other parts of his game, like those efforts from 20, 25 yards out, which he gets nowhere near. If you look at Ipswich, I mean, I don't know what happened there. If you look at Leeds and Peru, I mean, there was no pace on that shot at all. And again, 20 to 25 yards out, it beats him. And that's a problem. And if you're going to be a top goalkeeper at this level, you need a well-rounded game, and he hasn't got that. So for me, I think, as a point-blank reaction shot stopper, I think he's excellent. But he's cost us too many goals recently. Even Rotherham, you could argue he should have done a lot better. So I think if we're going for the top six, like the board say we are, then unfortunately we need to upgrade in that area.
Yeah. Okay. Mark, do you concur with that? You know, despite those saves yesterday, Les has picked up, Les points 100% right when you look at those goals, the way he's highlighted them. But... what do you think?
He's prone in virtually every game to put us under pressure with a loose pass. The one against Plymouth cost us a few games from Zach Viner and put our form back because he had to overextend his knee. He did one in the first half. It's just too loose passing, and he's prone to getting beaten from long distance with the ball close to him. So I think his reaction time or his starting position can be poor. I think the Leeds game, the Ipswich game, possibly the goal against Plymouth as well, where it's hit outside the box. He's got to be quicker. So No. Yeah, I mean, he does make. Lots of championship goalkeepers. I mean, goalkeepers at that level will make good reaction saves. But yeah. Your all round game, be a great goalkeeper. Your all round game's got to be great. One on one, obviously, you've got to be brave in taking crosses. You've got to be able to catch the ball, dive at players' feet. But now your distribution. Because teams play a lot of the high line, your distribution's got to be better. Mm. You cannot afford to make loose passes to put your team under pressure like that. No. So I think if we had a strong enough number two, possibly a new boss might say, "Well, look, I'm looking at the failings or the weaknesses of this person. Have I got strong enough person, to come in and challenge him? We haven't at the moment." So he's got Max has got lots of good points, but not he's got lots of he's got lots of weaknesses as well.
Ian, if the nest egg is going to be cracked in January under the new man, and I get a sneaky feeling that it probably is going to be,
It will be.
Is that something on the shopping list, an upgrade? You know, because I mean, do you take a Premier League? What do you think?
You can't say we need two players for every position, and then not have two players for every position. And we haven't got, we haven't got a Dan Bentley that's competing with Matt. It needs to be that level of competition. So, absolutely, that's what we need. And we've then got the problem that we've got too many goalkeepers. Mm. You know, we've got four now. We've got a 27-man first-team squad.
Four goalies.
With four goalies, one of whom's injured. Yeah. So, unless one of the other lads is as good as Matt's, potentially better. And I'm talking about Badgett, Wells Richards, or even the guy Lewis Thomas they brought in from Forest Green, who apparently had a brilliant game for the under-21s. And I know people say, well, it's the under-21s, but if you're making world-class saves, they're world-class saves, whether you're playing for the under-21s, the under-16s, or the first team. So, and he played, a fair number of games for Forest Green. So he's probably... My guess would be that he'd be the second best keeper down there. But we can't go out and loan an emergency one because Badgett's played the equivalent of the league games you need to have to qualify to bring in an emergency loan. But, we need competition in every place. And it's like when we talk about right back, everybody's forgotten Ross McCrory.
Yeah.
And he was brought in to play attacking right back. So... that's something else that the injury situation has robbed us of.
Okay, all right, Les, Ian, and I have talked to death about the departure of Nigel. We were doing it live at 3:30 on Sunday. I tried to get hold of you, Mark. I don't know where you were, but
Kidders of the Flower Moon. I was watching.
Let's have a quick word from Les about the events of. Pearson going, I don't think you're a member of the so-called cult of Nige, but were you surprised at it, the timing of it? What were your thoughts?
I think the club deserve a lot of credit for making the decision. I think Pearson did a very good job behind the scenes in terms of, developing youth players, in terms of rebalancing the wage bill. I think he was excellent at that. But if you look at the pitch, on the pitch, I wasn't seeing a huge amount of progress. People were saying, oh, yeah, but we're fighters now. Well, that's pretty basic, basic expectation. I don't think he got the best out of the signings that he made. I thought it was dull. I thought it was not particularly enticing to go and watch. I'm pleased because I think Pearson's very clever with his words. I think everything he says has a lot of thought behind it with the main aim of protecting himself. I don't get the love in. I think the love in is partly down to having a big name manager, which is something that we haven't had in the past. But in terms of on the pitch, it was like watching football in the mid-1990s. Lots of runners, lots of players working hard, quite direct and very little quality. So I don't understand the love in. I appreciate that, players have gone and it hasn't been reinvested, but that's football. Has he done enough on the pitch to warrant all that money back? I don't think he had.
I mean, the chairman said, Pearson won't be happy himself with the performance, and he almost sort of like brush the injuries aside. He's like, well, the injuries are there. I mean, yeah, he has been unlucky with injuries.
He's been unlucky with injuries. Ball
and Rennie have gone as well.
Well, that's the way it is. You know, I mean, this kind of forum reaction of, you know, Pearson as a martyr, as a saviour, some kind of religious figure. I just don't get it. I find it quite embarrassing, to be honest with you. So let's get a manager in who's, or a head coach in, who's going to hopefully introduce a good brand of football at Ashton Gate, because we haven't seen it for the last 2.5 years. And, you know, he's not a Bristol City, he's not the usual Bristol City appointment, was he? He was brought in to do a job. His experience was needed. He did it.
Yep.
Thank you for your service. See you later. Let's get someone else in who can now take us forward on the pitch.
Okay, Mark, we didn't talk, haven't spoken to you during the week about it. The communication from the hierarchy, eventually it came out. I mean, the best interview with anybody from the hierarchy was done by, is it Ross Arnott of HTV? With the CEO of Bristol Sport. But, you know, some veiled criticism from the chairman about the international breaks and then coming back and giving them too much time off and decondition them as he suddenly become an expert on players. And as people have pointed out on social media, under Lee Johnson, there was a period, 3 years, where 17 games after international breaks, Golden Boy Lee, his record was 1-1, drawn 6, lost 10. What's your, since we haven't spoken to you this week, Mark, what's your thoughts been as the dust has settled?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like this, you know, narrative. Whatever the reasons, you know, the club are saying this is the reason we got rid of him, because you're only going to get one side of the story. Nigel isn't able to answer back because obviously there's an NDA in place, so he isn't able to give his side of the story.
Mark, sorry, can I stop you there? You said an NDA. Nigel's contract, right? He will be paid contractually paid to the end of his contract, right? He would not in business be expected to sign an NDA. They might have said, Nigel, look, you're in a really bad place at the moment and we don't really want you around anymore. We're going to pay you another 6 months, right? As a thank you for what you've done. Yeah. But by the way, we want you to sign an NDA.
Let's just start again. Nigel hasn't given his side of the story, but I don't want to wipe that aside because he's gone. I think it could have been handled a lot better in that the club didn't want to give him a new contract. They obviously didn't want to give him a new contract. For all parties, it would have been much better to say, without this international break thing, we don't think you're the right man to take us forward, because I don't think they did. Nigel, he seemed to force the issue, and I think my opinion is that some of that came from his health issues. He's obviously suffered. He's in a lot of pain. He's had back operation. He had neurological issues, which hopefully will be sorted out, and we wish him the best of health, because for anybody, that's, you want people to, you know, have good health, and he's got, you know, a lot of health issues now that need sorting out. The club obviously didn't think that he was the right man to take them forward. It'd been better for all parties to say, Nigel, this can't carry on. You want a new contract. We don't want to give you one. We don't think you're the right man. Let's just settle up now. Let's just agree, you know, a mutually agreeable exit. And, you know, let's just part on good terms, rather than the manager saying, I haven't heard from anybody. The club don't obviously in their it's their gift to talk when they like. They Lansdowne or somebody could have said, well, you know, we don't need to talk to him. We don't need to say anything. It would have been much better for all parties if they just come out and said to him, look, Nigel, you want a new contract. We don't want to give you one. We don't think you're the right man to take us forward. We would like, you know, we'd like you to go. And this is the package. Let's agree on a payoff. No, it would have been much nicer. And then people would have respected that instead of that's just my opinion. Okay. It didn't happen, but that's just my opinion. And I think
that's fair.
It would have been a nicer way.
Said, Nigel, we're not going to give you a new contract. Your health, we want you to get well, but take leave of absence, but we don't want to renew your contract and we're going to go out and find your replacement.
In a perfect world, I think that it didn't happen, yeah. But it would have been a nicer way for it to have ended.
Of course. Ian, you've been shaking your head while Mark's saying that. What's your take on it?
Well, can we stop a couple of things? How do you know that conversation with Nigel didn't happen and he wasn't given the opportunity to leave by mutual consent and he said, no chance. If you want to get rid of me, you sack me. How do you know?
I don't know. I mean, it's all subjective because I don't know.
So there's no point pontificating about that and NDAs. It wouldn't have been an NDA he had to sign. If anything, it would have been a compromise agreement. But if he's been sacked, the compromise agreement will be part of any payoff. But as Dave said, there's two ways football clubs do it. Years ago, they used to pay the contract off in a lump. These days, they tend, because a lot of the managers are on a lot more money, if you look at the, who's the fellow that was at Graham Potter, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Now, Chelsea wouldn't have paid him off in a lump.
No.
I guarantee that. They'll go on paying his contract till he gets another job. So he's got a real good living for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Right, for doing nothing, if you will. So this other phrase is really winding me up, and I'm really sorry to say it, hierarchy, right? If there's a problem with somebody, name them. If someone's questioning your decisions, name them. Don't talk about the hierarchy, because that could be anybody. That could be Steve, John, Gavin Marshall, anybody.
Could be even Tinian. It could be even Tinian, couldn't it?
It could be Brian Tinian. And you know, I've got some stuff to say on the structure later on. If you want to talk about that now, we can. But I don't think these and what John Lansdowne said wasn't veiled. He talked about people having time off in the international breaks, thought it was too much. Now, it's not just him saying it. You know, perhaps other people at the club, perhaps Brian Tinian said it. Is he not entitled to have an opinion on that?
Well, I think, Ian, John Lansdowne
said it was unprecedented, right? That means he's talked to other clubs and said, what do you do during the international break?
I think the thing is, you'd have thought with the international break thing, and again, I hark back to the Lee Johnson record after the international break was crap, absolutely crap, right? Okay, but when it was said, if you think if they had 11 days off after the game against Leicester, which was on the 7th, right, and they only had, you could imagine them after the Leicester, go away, lads, come back, report back for training on Monday the 16th. Then you got a full week of training in the lead up to the Coventry game, right? And the Coventry game, the first half hour of that, we were utter crap, right? But if they weren't coming back until the Wednesday, which is only 2 real days training, then he's right to be critical. This business about managers having to be omnipresent all the time. Steve Coppell, not a good example when he was with us, but he really used to sort of do things, turn up, all the best managers, Cluffy used to be off doing his own thing, turn up, play squash, turn up at 2:45, do his talk. So,
well, Clough wasn't a tracksuit manager. He left that to others, wouldn't he? He was a manager. He wasn't a coach.
Yeah.
He didn't believe in
the training ground and the manager. So, but look, that's
The big difference is Brian Clough was successful.
Yeah.
Right. You can do what you want. You could work from home. Right. If you're successful, as Les put brilliantly, we haven't been successful. We played rubbish football. We've gone 31 games, league games, without winning back-to-back games. And people are talking like it's some sort of religious event.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's a good point. You notice that statistic as well, and I'm welcome.
Well, like Les, I don't get it. I really don't. If somebody can sit me down and explain it, because it seems to border on two things. Number one, he hasn't had any money. Well, that's absolute nonsense. He has had money and he has signed players. He signed 23 players, for God's sake. So can we stop that for us if we don't do anything else. And the you know, I'd say we'll come on to the structure and all that. I've got that from impeccable sources, and you know, I can talk about that then if you want. But let's just stop this thing about, oh well, the hierarchy did. Who did it? Who said it, Nigel? Was it John Lansdowne? Who was it?
Well, can I just say something, you know, just to finish what I said. You know, I'd like things to have end nicely. That comes from perhaps from a very naive viewpoint. You know, I like things to be done all tied up, loose ends, and it didn't work like that. So as ever said, I would rather that the dirty linen wasn't aired. Let's just put it that way. I'd rather the dirty linen wasn't aired in public, and that they sorted it out, and he went all right, and they didn't want him. Yeah, that was it. But that's right, life. So yeah, that's just my opinion, but that's how I liked it to end.
Yeah, but that takes two people. That takes two sides to agree something. Yeah,
it's exactly. not being handled great.
But whoever was at fault, whatever, it didn't end well, and it didn't need to.
And I think
that's very naive.
The anti-hierarchy of the fans, the agenda of the fans is a feeling that we should have spent more of the Scott money. As I said on Radio Bristol on Friday night, if in that window, nobody expected him to spend the money that Mark Robbins did out of the Gokkeris and Hamer sale, but if he'd gone out and bought a couple more players of the quality of Jason Knight, the squad wouldn't have been as threadbare. So the fans are directing their anger against the Lansdownes because they have to direct
The fans are directing their anger. Okay, they're saying Nigel wanted new players. The board have stopped Nigel from investing. So it's the board's fault because the money was there. They could have brought in. They could have invested some of the Scott money. Nigel's had his hands tied. It's the board's
like
fault.
Like every other championship manager does to a point, except the playoff ones.
Les, but that's the feeling of fans, isn't it?
You put your hand up there.
Well, I think a lot of the reason why fans are so behind Pearson is because of what he did at Leicester, but that was a long time ago, you know, and he hasn't done that everywhere he's been. So when he was employed, I was a bit worried that we were going to get to Pearson. It was at Derby or in Belgium where he did nothing. I mean, he did nothing at all. And the reality is, I think we probably got somewhere. Something in the middle, in that he did a good job behind the scenes, but not necessarily on the pitch. But he, like the interviews that John Lansdowne said, or it was the other guy, you know, he's had 2.5 years. He's the second longest serving manager in the championship. So he's been given a time. But I think the fan base are just not used to having a manager who has a proven track record. But the problem is, it was a long time ago. And I think football has moved on a bit. And I think he was found out on the pitch, and I think there was a lack of playing style. And we were poor at home pretty much the whole time he was there.
So
thanks for your service. See you later.
Bye. And just could have been handled a bit better. All right, so we've had a frenzy this week as to who the next person's going to be. It started off with John Eustace, and then Friday the frenzy got even worse because Frank Lampard was allegedly interviewed in Bath, then seen with Christine Bleakley, or whatever her name is, in Milsom Street. There were photographs. There was even somebody using an old picture of Frank Ashton Gate yesterday, because he doesn't look that young now. Ian, and then Liam Manning's been mentioned, Luke Williams, those are the sort of names. But Ian, and I don't want to talk about structure today, because I think if we talk about structure today, it'll be speculation. I think who we sign, and we're going to have a broadcast. We're going to have a broadcast soon as new manager's announced. We will do a new manager special episode. But Ian, you're going to reveal what you think is going to happen in the next 48 hours.
Okay. Couple of things. And this is information from really good sources. So it's not Frank Lampard. The manager will be announced on Monday and told by, once again, an impeccable source, the fans are going to be really excited by it. So I've got a sneaking feeling, because John Lansdowne said a lot of the speculation has been wide of the mark.
Yeah.
I've got a sneaking feeling that it's going to be a foreign coach. And I've got a sneaking feeling. Now, it, whether it would be a big name like a Bielsa or a Hasenhüttl, who, as far as I know, are both out of work.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think what seems to be happening in the modern game is people are doing what Leicester did and going to get the number two at a really good club. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was somebody who was an assistant manager, a head coach at a Bundesliga club or a La Liga, something like that. And I that seems to be, I'll call it a trend. That's what we've got in it, that's what I think is going to be. And possibly, I mean, Liam Manning, if you read his profile, I mean, it sounds like the job description we put out. So, but possibly, and I wouldn't be terribly disappointed with that. But on those things that John's saying that the speculation was, he said he couldn't believe how wider the market was, and it was bookies putting up trying to put up a bit of clickbait, get the odds going. And I understand that.
He could be bluffing.
Yeah, he could be bluffing. This is a classic example of what goes on. So people are sending WhatsApp messages around, putting stuff on Twitter about the registration number of a vehicle at Ashton Gate, right? So Mark and I are leaving the supporters club last night, and that vehicle, it was said to be Liam Manning or Frank Lampard, whatever, there's a woman driving it and a little boy in there, right? Or a young man, I'll say. Do you know what they were doing with the vehicle? They were towing out a burger van. Now, that is the God's honest truth. Now, this is how daft it gets. So, you know, I had a laugh. I actually went over and had a look at who was driving it, because I thought, well, I got to find out. And this woman gets out, and then this young lad gets out the front seat. And I thought, hello, that's not Frank Lampard or Liam Manning. So, you know, I just found that hilarious. But that's the type of thing that goes on. And so in fairness to the board, let me just say this about what John Lansdowne and Gavin Marshall have said about communication. They've admitted they screwed up, right? Now, they're a bit damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't, because when they came out and did the interviews, I read at least two people saying, oh, it's all crap, it's all rubbish. So I said, well, what part of the interview didn't you like? Oh, I haven't listened to it.
Yeah, all right. No, that's it.
So that's what they're up against.
That sums it up.
But they've made, they've come out and communicated. Now, people... And then people say, well, it's all lies. Oh, is it? Well, what evidence have you got that they're lying? Well, they are, aren't they?
Okay. All right, guys, I need to bring this to a relatively... I've got a christening.
I don't think so. But that's the stuff that made me laugh yesterday.
So, Ian,
but
your money's on from your impeccable source, an as yet unnamed foreign coach. You've thrown in the name of Hasenhüttl. Somebody said you never get him, even though he's between jobs at the moment. Decent track record.
I said I don't... Hang on, Dave. Let's get it straight before you set me up for a fall. I've said that I don't think it would be somebody like Bielsa or Hasenhüttl. Probably a younger foreign coach who's currently an assistant to a manager. So perhaps the assistant from Borussia Dortmund or Bayern or something like that.
You said you'd also been told that it's an appointment that would excite people. If we get assistant manager, I wonder how QPR fans are feeling at the moment, because they signed a manager who fits the bill, I think, that you've just said, because I'd never heard of the bloke before.
Sifuentes.
And that's what, 25 years ago this week, we signed Benny Bloody Lennartsen. Yeah, I never heard of him.
Well, he was meant to be a director of football. He wasn't meant to be the manager.
Benny, no, you're right. And John Ward wanted Ray Harford to help, and that's all history. All right, so you think, Ian, a foreign coach, yeah? Possibly. All right. Les.
It seems, from what people have said, it seems most likely to me.
Right. Okay. Les, what would you like to see? Because whoever comes, you know, we're going for promotion, not in 2 years' time. You know, we're going for promotion this season.
It won't be Bielsa, because the time to negotiate a deal would take far longer than the dismissal of Pearson to now. So that's just not going to happen. Plus, he's going to bring a whole entourage. It's going to cost millions and millions of quid. I mean, if you could say you could have anyone who's available, I mean, Hasenhüttl would be unbelievable, but I think he's probably going to look at far better, bigger clubs than us, unless he fancies a challenge. But I mean, I'd like to think we may have tried to have a word with him, do you know what I mean? And probably got dismissed pretty quickly. I've got no issue with a foreign coach at all. I get the impression it probably will be, because if it's happening on Monday or Tuesday, then the likes of Manning and all that, I mean...
Well, Oxford must have been playing yesterday.
There just isn't the time to get that deal done. Or you'd expect the deal to already be done, because like Ian said, it's going to be a very exciting person. That's, you know, that means something's already done. And, you know, if you look online, there doesn't seem to be any concrete links from anywhere. No. So which tells me that perhaps it is a foreign coach, because would it have leaked out if it was?
Maybe one of us, you don't live locally, Les, but maybe one of us should be up at Bristol Airport now, because where are flights coming into Bristol Airport in the next 24 hours? Loads of places, isn't it, really?
It would be a very un-Lansdowne thing to do, but that's the way football's going, isn't it? Young, hungry coaches like Farke. He was a number two at Dortmund, went to Norwich, got them promoted.
Wagner was the same, wasn't he? He was at Dortmund, wasn't he? Went to Huddersfield.
Yeah.
I just want a coach who comes in and first instills some confidence in the players, coaches them better on the pitch. We want winning football before we can start talking about a style of football. We need to win games, be competitive, win games, be good at home, because you know most fans watch home games rather than go away. And I think at the moment we're just a decent counter attack inside, but we play with a lot of fear, and we've got somebody's got to lift that and get the maximum out of those young players. But I don't think the squad is good enough to compete at the top end of the table. So you know you could see a lot of players traded, but we just want to see the team start to win games, be competing at the right end of the league, and you know, put a smile back on the fans' faces, because we've had 5 years of dirge. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's a bit longer than that. I mean, it's 6 years since the cup run and that golden half a season under Lee Johnson.
That was the best squad.
He had a limited squad, and he got the best out of limited resources with decent football, a decent cup run, and then basically it's all gone a bit downhill since spring of 2018. There's been the odd sparkling game in there, but we've been tied up with COVID. Even Johnson's last season in charge, before the season stopped with COVID, which is what, 19-20, we were still in with a shout at the playoffs of that season, although when the lads came back, it was disaster, which led to Lee Johnson's demise. And then the Holden debacle, and then 2.5 years of Nigel Pearson,
we've had moments.
We wish him the best. We wish him his health gets back, because there's nothing worse than, you know, having a health issue. We wish him his best for the future. He'll get a great reception when he comes back, because I'm sure he's going to continue in football. And as they say, we thank you for your service. And he has put the club, it is in a better place as a result of him being here than it was beforehand. And it's just a little bit of a shame that it ended in the way that it has done. And that's probably both parties haven't helped each other help themselves on there. But look, we'll be back. We'll definitely be back reviewing the QPR game, but we're gonna have a special episode this week. But I say I need to bring it to a close now. Ian, Mark and Les, thanks for your support today. And everybody who continues to listen, record audience today, listening, watching live on YouTube. So thanks for that. And we'll see you all again very, very soon. Goodbye.
Have a lovely Sunday, everybody.
As happy as a king when the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up. The sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours. and all. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin's out bobbing along. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bobbing along.